me, it's about relationships, building relationships built on love, care, and trust. In today's age, players got to understand that you care about them. They're an individual that has a story, and they got to understand that we want to develop that entire person and get to know them. I think if you do that, if you invest in them, they're going to give you the best they have.
This is the Signal Caller Podcast.
From the X's to the O's to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Your inside look at West Virginia Mountaineer football, the Big 12 Conference, and the college game at large.
Now, coming to you from high atop the majestic mountains of almost heaven,
here's your host,
Jed Drenning.
Welcome to it, folks. Make yourselves comfortable. I'm going to give you some sense of what you can expect here. The world said to me, Jed, we just don't have enough podcasts. As it turns out, the world was being sarcastic, but I didn't know that. So I went ahead and put my name on one and threw it on the pile. And now that we've cut the ribbon and we've broken the champagne bottle over the bow of the ship, all the ceremonial stuff's behind us. The only thing left to do is actually get started on the first ever episode of what we're calling the Signal Caller Podcast. Speaking of firsts, the first off-season of the Neil Brown era at West Virginia is in mid-swing. And with the dog days of summer straight ahead, I'm going to ask that you return your tray table to its upright and locked position because we're jumping right into things with a big prediction. Maybe not a bold prediction, but a big one. But before we unveil that, I'd like to extend a warm greeting to Mountaineer Nation and to all the other college football fans listening in out there across the various platforms. As those two very talented folks with much more appealing voices than mine just pointed out in that introduction, I'm your host, Jed Drenning, West Virginia football sideline reporter and former magazine publisher. And this is the maiden voyage of the Signal Caller Podcast. You'll figure out pretty quickly what we're all about here. Football talk. More specifically, WVU Mountaineer football talk. But first, as promised, we'd like to start off with a thoughtful prediction. And here's the deal. I'm going to make this prediction, and then my plan is to, in effect, spend the rest of this podcast making the case as to why I believe this prediction will, in fact, come true. Now, I don't know if this will rank up there with Jules Verne effectively predicting the Apollo moon landing way back in 1865, or even as predictions go, if it will rank up there with that episode of The Simpsons that predicted the three-eyed fish that would one day be found next to the nuclear power plant, but here goes. Under head coach Neil Harmon Brown, the West Virginia Mountaineers, I predict, will bring a Big 12 football championship to Morgantown. When? Why? How? I want you to think about all those things, but more than that, let's take it a step further. I want you to envision what this is actually going to be like. Imagine what it's like to make your travel plans to Jerry World in Arlington. Imagine what the tailgating environment will be like outside the stadium. What would it feel like? What would it sound like? Imagine what it'll be like to be inside the stadium and you're in the stands for the post-game celebration with the confetti flying everywhere and Neil Brown and the team on center stage hoisting that trophy. I want you to envision all that. And I want you to think about those questions I asked because we're going to discuss all those things and I'm really going to lay this out for you and make as compelling a case as I can to get you to believe it too. We're going to break it all down right after this quick message from Mountaineer World, the largest Mountaineer store in the world.
To Mountaineer World, the largest WVU Mountaineer store in the world. Show your Mountaineer pride this season with Mountaineer World. Shop online 24/7 at MountaineerWorld.com. To Mountaineer World, under the big copper roof at Benny's Place in Bridgeport.
You're listening to Mountaineer Football Talk on the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
Let's do it already. Opening kickoff from Arlington on the other side of the break.
They call it Jerry World. AT&T Stadium in Arlington is home to the Dallas Cowboys, but it also plays host to the Big 12 championship game. The stadium alone takes up 73 acres. Inside, you'll find the largest LED display anywhere in the world, 72 feet high, and 160 feet wide. They say if you brought the Statue of Liberty inside and sat it at the 50-yard line, the top of her torch would scrape the roof. Things really are bigger in Texas. but I only know this because of what I've read. I've never been to Jerry World, and neither have the West Virginia Mountaineers, at least not yet. Indulge me for a minute because I'm going to imagine it's the first Saturday in December, and the city of Arlington has been painted old golden blue. A legion of West Virginia fans scrambled on flights from places like Columbus, Pittsburgh, Charlotte, Dallas, and BWI descend on the Big 12 title game, poised to watch the Mountaineers tangle with a college football blue blood for the right to hoist a conference championship trophy for the first time since winning the Big East in 2011. Some fans even carpool from the Mountain State, or get there by RV, or by horse and buggy, or by magic carpet ride. They get there by any means necessary on short notice, desperate to be on hand for this opportunity they've waited so long to see. The opponent, much like the specific year this might be, isn't really clear. But the odds are it'll be a team whose key contributors hail from towns like Muleshoe, Texas, or Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. After all, in the Big 12, don't they all come from places like that? Jerry World also provides nearly 70 acres of parking area, and on this day, soaring above a significant portion of that are thousands of flying WV flags. Blocks, or maybe even miles away, and hours before kickoff, you can hear John Denver at his very best. It's obvious, maybe even painfully so, to anyone on hand, that the West Virginia fans assembled in Arlington really, really want this title. And why not? After all, back in Morgantown, deep inside Milan Puskar Stadium, within the Donald J. Broward Hall of Traditions, you'll find a lot of really cool stuff. You'll find a shrine to Pat White.
And a quarterback from Daphne, Alabama.
You'll find walls full of all-conference performers from the Big East and the Big 12. You'll find trophies from some of college football's most storied bowls.
Leave no doubt tonight! They shouldn't have played the old golden blue! Not this night!
You'll find a host of conference championship trophies. You'll find a wall-sized plaque commemorating West Virginia's combined 15 league titles in the Big East and the Southern Conference. You'll even find a game ball from the Mountaineers' landmark 500th all-time victory, a 27-0 shutout of Rutgers on November 9, 1985. But what you won't find, what's conspicuously absent from this impressive gallery of hardware, is a Big 12 championship trophy. That's the missing piece to the collection that I believe Neil Brown will help West Virginia put on the shelf. So the question becomes, why him? Why Neil Brown? What is it about this 39-year-old former UMass and Kentucky wide receiver,
diving touchdown catch, Neil Brown,
that convinces me he can lead West Virginia to the Big 12 promised land and topple the powers that be in a league with so many dangerous teams and with such rich tradition? First of all, it won't happen overnight. After losing such a wealth of talent to graduation and to the NFL, 2019 was always going to be a season with its share of challenges, even before you factored in the added barrier of a coaching transition. But I do believe once Neil Brown and his staff get their legs under them and find their true north, the arrow will consistently point up in Morgantown until, ultimately, that Big 12 trophy lands in the Hall of Traditions. But what makes me so confident this will happen? Well, a number of things. But let's start with this. It's not as if West Virginia has never been part of the Big 12 championship conversation. On at least two different occasions, Dana Holgorsen had West Virginia within striking distance of that elusive Big 12 title before things unraveled. We all remember far too well last year when West Virginia was 8-1 and number 7 in the country before the wheels came off in a six-day span in late November. And in 2016, before the Big 12 title game was resurrected and the league champion was determined purely by the regular season results, Holgorsen's Mountaineers shocked the conference, winning 10 games and climbing as high as number 10 nationally. But three turnovers inside their own 10-yard line in Stillwater, coupled with a snow-blown meltdown against the Sooners in Morgantown, proved too costly to overcome in their pursuit of a conference crown. Now, can Neil Brown help the Mountaineers take that next giant step? Can he transform WVU from a program that contends into a program that's showered by confetti in Arlington?
On behalf of the Big 12 Conference, it's my pleasure to present the championship trophy.
Head coaching candidates come in all shapes and sizes, but what you often see is someone who specializes in one area of the game and becomes so good at it, so masterful, that they parlay that into their own head coaching opportunity, as a school out there looks at him and says, we've got to have what that guy is doing on that side of the football. We'll give him the support he needs to surround himself with a staff that can help with the other phases of the game, but we need what he's doing schematically and the production he offers in that one key area. This approach to hiring can, of course, be a recipe for success, but remember, football is an interconnected game of cause and effect, and there's a lot of history to suggest that these specialized coordinators turned head coach are most successful when they branch out beyond their pedigree and beyond their own background and develop a genuine interest in running their program in such a way as to help the phases of their football team that they don't specialize in. When this isn't done, failure often follows. Charlie Strong, a coach with a highly decorated defensive pedigree, didn't win at Texas in large part because of a Longhorns offense that couldn't climb out of the bottom half of the Big 12 in scoring during any of his three seasons in Austin. And despite the offensive fireworks Cliff Kingsbury provided at Texas Tech, he was fired because of a Red Raiders defense that couldn't get a stop and couldn't get help. Expecting his defense to defend an average of 78 snaps per game during his 6 years in Lubbock finally caught up to Kingsbury, who ironically is now in the NFL. In short, it doesn't serve a defensive head coach well to handcuff his offense. And on the flip side, an offensive-oriented head coach will never help his team reach its full potential if he's regularly putting his defense behind the eight ball. In today's game, balance between a program's offense and defense, along with the requisite attention to detail on special teams, is what provides the rock-solid foundation needed to win consistently and avoid the maddening year-to-year peaks and troughs that eventually cost a lot of coaches their jobs. The good news for WVU fans is Neil Brown emphatically checks each of those boxes, catering to all three phases of the game. Offense? Come on. Special teams? You betcha. Defense? Wait till you see how he helps his defense. What helped Brown win at Troy, and what made him such a compelling candidate, is that in some ways he's the best of both worlds. Well, actually the best of all three worlds when you throw special teams into the mix. He's a talented offensive strategist with an almost staggering attention to detail who isn't afraid to win ugly by playing field position, weaponizing his special teams units, and when necessary, calling the game in such a way as to really help his defense out. These are qualities that set Neil Brown apart from many offensive-oriented head coaches. One of Brown's obvious strengths is his diversity as a play caller. At Texas Tech, he coached Seth Dagey to back-to-back 4,000-yard passing seasons, and four times in 3 years at Tech, he coached receivers who registered double-digit touchdown grabs. The surgical game plan Brown devised to help the Red Raiders shock Oklahoma as four touchdown underdogs at Owen Field in 2011 was one for the ages.
Upset time in Norman. The 39-game home winning streak, longest in the country, goes by the boards, and a happy group of Red Raiders.
Brown's offense ripped off 96 snaps without committing a turnover, while Dagey spread his 34 completions to 11 different targets, and even caught a pass himself on a gadget play. All told, Brown led the Raiders' offense to three consecutive top 15 finishes nationally during his stint in Lubbock. At Troy, his offense is consistently ranked among the best in the Sun Belt Conference in scoring and big plays through the air, while generating three different 1,000-yard rushers in four seasons. Brown can help you win by dialing up an offense that scores. His Troy teams eclipsed 50 points 8 times in 4 years, and he's a staple of consistency. Remarkably, in 11 years as an FBS play caller, he's never been shut out. But none of that is what makes Neil Brown different. A lot of coaches can put together productive offenses these days. Not many of those coaches, though, are willing to apply that same attention to detail when it comes to their transition units. Brown does. When Neil Brown discusses his commitment to special teams, It's not just lip service. It's real, and his track record bears that out. Last season, Brown's Troy squad ranked number one in the country out of 130 teams in ESPN's special teams efficiency rating, which factors in the point contributions to each team's scoring margins on a per-play basis. Brown's special teams units showed up big in plenty of key moments last year, including Troy's win at Nebraska, where the Trojans returned a punt for a 58-yard touchdown and averaged 54 yards on five punts of their own, including a field-flipping 79-yarder that set the tone early in the game. History tells us that for a program like West Virginia, exceptional moments on special teams can often be the difference in an extra win or two each year, maybe more. From Danny Bug's buzzer-beating 69-yard punt return to knock off Maryland in 1973, to Paul Woodside's four field goal performance against Florida in the Peach Bowl, and of course, Phil Brady's fake punt to seal the Mountaineers' Sugar Bowl win over Georgia.
Now they're going to fake it. Brady, the punter, has got a first down. And that might just sew up the Nokia Sugar Bowl for the Mountaineers.
Solid special teams play has always rewarded WVU's better teams. Consistent production on special teams could prove invaluable for a program that hasn't returned a punt for a score since Tavon Austin last did so against TCU in 2012. So now we've discussed Neil Brown's offense and his approach to special teams. Next, we're going to take a deeper dive into things defensively. We'll take a look at the production that defensive coordinator Vic Koenig has had in working with Neil Brown, and we'll take a look at the role that Brown has played in setting the table for that defense. It's all part of his complimentary team football approach to the game, the same approach that helped him pull 10 pounds of success out of a 5-pound bag at Troy. We'll take a look at all that after this quick word from Mountaineer World.
To Mountaineer World, the largest WVU Mountaineer store in the world. Show your Mountaineer pride this season with Mountaineer World. Shop online 24/7 at MountaineerWorld.com. To Mountaineer World, under the big copper roof at Benny's Place in Bridgeport.
For more West Virginia Mountaineer football content, follow us at The Signal Caller on Twitter.
Welcome back, folks. Now, you might want to lace up your shoes and buckle your belt because we're going to get down to brass tacks and talk a little defense. Now, this is another area where you really start to see Neil Brown separate himself from a long list of talented offensive minds and demonstrate that he really is a complete head coach who offers due diligence to all aspects of his team. Brown assembles a solid defensive staff and then sets out to offer that staff whatever help they might need in putting their defenses in position to succeed. Now, while Neil Brown was at Troy, the Trojans' defenses consistently made plays under Vic Koenig. In fact, over the course of the last 3 years, they allowed the fewest yards per rush in the Sun Belt Conference, stopped the run first, that is his approach, but more so than that, they led the nation in turnovers forced during that same three-year stretch. They had 87 takeaways, more than any defense in college football.
The Trojans make the interception in the end zone to save the game.
Don't make the mistake of letting Brown's reputation as an apostle of how mummies air raid deceive you. That's hardly the only thing that's influenced his coaching style. I mean, look back a couple years ago. This is more evidence that Neil Brown's not afraid to win ugly. Through the first six games of 2017, Troy had just two touchdown passes through those six games, but despite that, they were still 4-2. And last year, in 2018, the Trojans actually won a conference game with just 220 total yards and 12 points. Now, those things can't happen. You don't win games like those if you have a head coach who isn't very defense-friendly, which Neil Brown obviously is. If you want proof that Neil Brown is investing in helping his team's defense succeed, just look back at Troy's 2017 upset win at LSU. That big win in Baton Rouge against the Tigers, he employed a very methodical ground game, Brown did, and his strategy and play calling resulted in a world-class game of keep away, and it really helped the Troy defense out. That was evidenced by the fact that with 5 minutes left in the game, the Trojans' defense had been on the field for a total of just 46 snaps. That put them in position to finish strong with the fresh legs needed to close out the biggest upset of the 2017 college football season. And I'm sure nobody walking off the field that night in Tiger Stadium had a bigger smile on their face than Brown's defensive coordinator, Vic Koenig. Now, if you don't think there'll be times in the Big 12 in which that strategy of trying to keep snap counts down will come in handy, at least trying to, then you just haven't been paying attention. I mean, you might not be able to do it for the balance of 60 minutes. These offenses are just too prolific. You can't keep them off the field for that long. But what you might be able to do is do it for a stretch. You might be able to do it for a couple series if your defense really needs it and their tongues are wagging and they're running on empty. I mean, sometimes you just got to find a way to scrap out a couple first downs and then punt. Now, there's actually a bit of a story behind Brown's motivation that night to run the ball and dictate terms against LSU by controlling the clock. And it wasn't just in deference to the NFL talent that was populating the Tigers lineup. As an offensive coordinator at Troy, all the way back in 2008, Brown was part of a Trojan staff that blew a 31-3 lead against LSU in Baton Rouge and lost the game. Brown didn't scrap out a couple first downs and punt that night. Instead, he dialed up 72 pass attempts, still his highest total ever as a play caller, including 20 throws in Troy's final 21 offensive snaps. That approach helped set the table for the LSU comeback, and Brown learned a lesson that night back in 2008 that he'd never forget. Sometimes your defense doesn't need points. They just need a little help. And that night in 2017, when Troy stunned the Tigers, Brown gave them that help by avoiding tempo, working the play clock down before signaling anything into his quarterback, and keeping the Trojan defense on the sidelines with a Gatorade cup in their hand. Compare that to West Virginia's loss in Stillwater last year, and you'll start to see a bit of a contrast in philosophies. The Mountaineers watched a 17-point lead over Oklahoma State evaporate as the WVU defense was on the field for 54 snaps in the second half, including 30 plays in the fourth quarter alone. In the days leading up to the Neil Brown hire by West Virginia, I did a lot of research and prep work to get a full appreciation of who he was as a coach, philosophically and otherwise. I tore apart the box scores and the key analytics of his 51 games at Troy. I watched a lot of his game tape and his clinic tape, but just as critical as anything else, I went back and studied his weekly press conferences, both before and after Troy's games. See, the thing is, once you uncover the unique narrative behind each game and you start to understand the week-to-week points of emphasis that the staff and the team approach those games with, there's a lot of gold to be found from the coach's remarks in those press conferences. And the pattern I found with Neil Brown that was as true as any was his recognition of the value of playing good defense and his belief that you really can't win without it. Listen to this cut from his presser before Troy's game at Appalachian State last year, and you get a sense of the type of thinking he's so often circled back to.
You know, offensively, there's so many things that can go awry. Offensively, through a 12-game season, you're going to have some ups and downs. And the teams that consistently play well in defense, and it comes down to getting off blocks and making tackles. I mean, it really does. And the teams that can get off blocks and make tackles are teams that consistently give themselves a chance to win.
And there you go. Things on offense can go awry, so you better be able to shed blocks and make tackles. If you ever wanted to explain football to your Klingon friend in 20 words or less, right there's how you do it. I mean, if you heard that quote and didn't know who was saying it, you might guess it's a zero technique nose guard, not an old air raid wide receiver. They have to love to coach defense for this guy. For that matter, I'm sure they have to love to play defense for him. A guy from the offensive side of the football saying things like that, just being real. His accomplishments at Troy were obviously not an accident. They were very much by design. I mean, you don't win a lot of games by playing favorites with one side of the ball over the other based on where you coach. You win games with program balance, equal attention given to both sides of the ball and to all phases of the game. That's a sacred utterance, and I think it's one that Neil Brown seems to swear by. It's also not a coincidence that that's the prescription used by the most successful coaches of the modern era, irrespective of what the particular background of those coaches might be. Nick Saban, for example, was defense through and through. His early teams at Alabama were dangerous, but not as dangerous, you could argue, as they've now become because he's decided to open things up a little bit more offensively and build his team to be able to win both shootouts and slugfests. Saban's first team in Tuscaloosa threw for 225 yards a game. But last year, with Tua slinging it around,
Tua's looking to throw. It's a downfield shot. He's got it!
That passing total ballooned up by nearly 100 yards per game to 324, and you've seen in these postseason playoff games, sometimes Bama needs to score to keep pace and win some of those games. And Nick had to come around as an old defensive coordinator to the idea of opening things up a little bit more to be in position to win those games. To his credit, he's done so. Look at Urban Meyer. He's a guy that came up coaching wideouts at places like Colorado State and Notre Dame, and despite being regarded as an offensively driven head coach, his best teams, his three national title squads, were punctuated by their defensive achievements. And then there's Dabo Swinney. Dabo worked his way up through the coaching ranks on the offensive side of the football, but nasty defenses, especially in the trenches, have been a hallmark of this empire he's built at Clemson. Much like Neil Brown's incredible success at Troy, the level of prosperity enjoyed by these coaches, the biggest of the big, is rarely achieved without a coach who earned his stripes on one side of the football, fostering an environment truly conducive to upgrading his team on the other side of the football. For the sake of illustration, let's take a look at two different head coaches who were hired at different times and at different schools, but for the same reason: their successful track record as coordinators on the defensive side of the football. The first is Justin Wilcox, the head coach for the California Golden Bears. With offensive minds like Sonny Dykes and Jake Spavital cycling through the program in recent years, Cal was a team that got used to scoring points by the bucket load. Their high watermark came when quarterback Jared Goff threw for almost 5,000 yards.
Touchdown! What a pass from Jared Goff!
And became the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. The problem, though, was that the Bears' defense, with little help or consideration from a head coach who was fixated on his own offense, couldn't hold up their end. Things bottomed out with a 4-8 record in 2016 when the Cal defense was shredded to the tune of 43 points a game. When the Golden Bears staff was fired, it made sense that the school, hoping to fix the gaping holes it saw in the Cal defense, pursued a candidate whose background would suggest an ability to address these problems. In Justin Wilcox, a guy who'd made a name for himself by harassing quarterbacks, forcing turnovers, and winning on third down as the defensive coordinator at places like Wisconsin, USC, and Washington, Cal found their man. The shift in styles was a very abrupt one, and in just two seasons under the new approach Wilcox brought to Berkeley, the Cal defense has taken a quantum leap forward, finishing number 3 in the Pac-12 in scoring defense last season at a rate of just 20 points allowed per game, less than half what the Bears were getting gashed for 3 years ago. Problem solved, right? Not exactly. In just 2 years under Justin Wilcox, that once dynamic Golden Bears offense suddenly lost its fangs. California finished 2018 ranked dead last in the Pac-12 in scoring, passing, and total offense. Ouch. The overall result has been a 12-13 record for Wilcox during his first 2 years at the helm. Justin Wilcox is a smart guy. There's still obviously time for him to balance his approach out a bit more, remove the shackles from the Bears' offense by at least a little bit, and succeed with a more even-handed approach that could help all sides of his program. But not so far. To this point, it might appear that all Cal did by replacing Sonny Dykes with Justin Wilcox was exchange their extreme problems on defense with some new but equally extreme problems on offense. Compare the situation of Wilcox at Cal with the evolving tale of Gary Patterson at TCU. For my money, Gary Patterson is one of the most gifted defensive coaches in college football, and for the better part of his first decade as the head coach at TCU, he ran his program accordingly. The Frogs leaned on their defense almost to an extreme. Offensively, they played things close to the vest, they worked the clock, and played the field position game. As a 4-year starter at quarterback for TCU, Andy Dalton was one of Gary Patterson's favorite Frogs, not because he flung it around 50 times a game, which he didn't, but because he was a smart player who didn't make mistakes. For a long time, that's all Patterson asked of his offense. Set the table for our defense and don't take any silly chances that can put them in tough situations. And it was hard to argue with the results. TCU won a bunch of games, including the Fiesta and Rose Bowls, riding the back of a nasty defense that was ridiculously productive. From 2000 to 2010, TCU finished number 1 in the country in total defense 5 times. Then, the Big 12 happened. When the Frogs joined the league in 2012, Patterson quickly recognized that no matter how tough his defense was, this old-school approach wasn't suited for the shootouts his team was suddenly being dragged into. Sure, a couple times a year he might still find himself knee-deep in the kinds of 14-13 slobber knockers that made his heart swell, but he was far more often facing offenses that spread the field and drove snap counts up higher than anything he'd ever faced. Patterson, a hardline, old-fashioned, defensive-oriented head coach if ever there was one, probably hated to admit it to himself, but the only way to return to the kind of winning he was used to would be by scoring points, a lot of them. And that would require the type of unmitigated dedication to improving his offense that he'd probably never had to resort to before. After dropping games by scores like 41-38 to Baylor and 56-53 to a Texas Tech team with an offensive coordinator named Neil Brown, Patterson had enough. Following the 2013 season, he hired Air Raid disciples Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumby as co-coordinators to completely reimagine the Frogs' offense, an aspect of Patterson's program that until then, he'd never had much cause to meddle with. That summer, heading into the 2014 season, I heard Gary Patterson say, "I'm fine with winning a game 45-38. That is when I realized TCU was about to turn the corner as a true force to be reckoned with in the Big 12. What we were about to see was a potentially explosive offense paired with a guy who can coach defense with the best of them. Contrary to lazy refrains by the national media, yes, there's a place for defense in the Big 12. The difference is, it's of the situational variety. Just because Patterson's defense couldn't smother opposing offenses in the Big 12 the way they had when they rolled through opponents during his first decade on the job at TCU didn't mean they couldn't still play a critical role in helping the Frogs win games. Of course they could. It would just look different, statistically and otherwise. Patterson could still draw on that same tactical skill, that same ability as a defensive play caller to steal a key possession in the fourth quarter of a close game. He could still get a big stop in the red zone or force somebody off the field on a key third or fourth down, or maybe even force a critical turnover and give his offense the ball back in a tight game, maybe even a tight shootout. Wouldn't you know it, that season in 2014, the Frogs' offense exploded, averaging nearly 47 points per game as TCU finished just a whisker away from making the first ever four-team college football playoff tournament. Instead of losing all those shootouts, TCU now started winning some of them by scores like 55-52, 52-45, and 59-41. Gary Patterson's willingness to get out of his comfort zone and reinvent the Frogs' offense, despite the fact their new style of play might make things more challenging for his defense, made TCU a better football team. And in some ways, this new, more well-rounded approach probably made Gary Patterson a better head coach. So what does all this mean? It means that when it comes to a well-rounded, championship-caliber head coach who is mindful of all the moving parts on his team, Neil Brown is ahead of the curve. Some coaches take decades to figure it out, while others never do. Brown played under two head coaches during his college career. One of them, Hal Mumme, revolutionized college football with his air raid passing attack. The other, Mark Whipple, helped coach Ben Roethlisberger to his first Super Bowl. So yes, Neil Brown will always be, at least in part, a product of his offensive lineage. But he's a lot more than just a guy who can dial up a third down mesh package. He's also a former assistant coach who spent some of the formative years of his career working under defensive grinders like Tommy Tuberville and Mark Stoops. And he's a guy with a high enough football IQ to realize each game is a completely different challenge. Brown will dust off his fast-paced NASCAR offense and have it at the ready, knowing there will be weeks in the Big 12 when he'll have to rev up the tempo to survive a shootout. But he also knows there will be weeks he'll have to pump the brakes and keep his defense off the field. As a former offensive coordinator turned Group of Five head coach turned Big 12 head coach with a penchant for helping his defense fight the good fight, Brown's bio reads a lot like two of the hottest coaching names in the conference recently. Tom Herman of Texas, a former offensive coordinator who got the Houston job before landing on the 40 acres, and Matt Campbell of Iowa State, who turned a stint as an offensive coordinator into the top spot at Toledo before ending up in Ames, are both trending up in a big way. There's no reason to think Neil Brown won't enjoy similar success once he gets things aligned in Morgantown. Now, a lot of records have been bandied about since West Virginia hired Brown. By now, we've likely all seen his overall record, 35-16, his conference record at Troy, 23-9, and his record the last three seasons, 31-8. But the two records Brown posted that impressed me the most might be his 3-0 mark in bowl games at Troy and his 5-2 record last year with a backup quarterback after Caleb Barker, the Trojan starter, was lost for the year in Week 6. Both of those records speak to Brown's incredible ability to rein his team in and get them to focus in situations where they were facing two very different types of major distractions. And with that, it's time to get in victory formation and wrap this thing up, folks. Thanks for listening to this first ever episode of the Signal Caller Podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with plenty more content in future episodes about the Mountaineers, Neil Brown, and the Big 12. If you did like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. And of course, follow us on Twitter at The Signal Caller for more information about future episodes. In the meantime, I'll see you at the 50.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
The fun doesn't have to stop here.
Be sure to hit subscribe on your podcatcher now and never miss an episode.
If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback,
head over right now to Twitter at The Signal Caller and get involved.
Join us again next time.
Until then,
we'll see you at the 50.